This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Just a reminder that the show now streams on the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open up the app, type in Team 980, and hit the subscribe button if you don't mind. Also, hit the like button for us as well. The YouTube 980, Team 980 page. I'm on 10 to 1, Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Joining me right now is my good friend Joe House from The Ringer, at House from D.C., he's a fan of all DC sports. We'll talk NBA playoffs. I know you have been thinking about those, and I can't wait for tomorrow. Actually, can't wait to see some of the games tonight. But I want to go back to Sunday at Augusta. Joe does an excellent gambling show for The Ringer and talks golf all the time at Fairway Roland. So I don't know this. Were you a fan of Rory winning or not?
A huge fan of Rory winning. And I've been one of the guys, a Rory truther, for a full, you know, half a decade. It's been a relationship between me and Rory that goes all the way back, you know, 15 years or so, because the talent that he showed so early in his career, it felt like he could be a kind of rival to Tiger Woods, even though he was much, much younger. But with golf, you know, different generations can compete against one another. And he was the only guy coming up through the ranks in that, you know, sort of 2000 to 2010 timeframe, where it felt like, you know what, he might actually give Tiger a little bit of a challenge. It was not really meant to be for a whole variety of reasons, mainly Tiger's inability to stay healthy and all kinds of dramatic life events. But Rory's talent has been always unquestionable. It's just a matter of the 6 inches between his ears, Kevin. And we got the full Rory experience on Sunday in that regard, didn't we?
Oh, my God. So how did you what were the analogies of the up and down performance on Sunday before we get to just sort of the unbelievable weight that was lifted off his shoulders, but just the final round? Did you talk in terms of sports comparisons?
It's too hard because, you know, the excruciating experience of it, where it's just the man and his golf clubs and planet Earth. Those are all the elements. It's hard to compare that Rory experience to things in other sports. We've had, you know, champions that we've rooted for in our lives in different sports, but they've had to depend on their teammates to get there. You know, Ray Bourque for, you know, in Boston, beloved, had to go to Colorado to get his ring. Similar, those kinds of guys who've had to leave their situations and go on to find the championship that they kind of deserved over the course of their career. But golf is so, you know, it's just the guy and his clubs and whatever the golf course presents that makes it so unique and uniquely excruciating.
Yeah, it was, though. I mean, you know, fair point, individual sport versus team sport, but it was a situation of keeping both teams in the game simultaneously, you know, a Jameis Winston or a Philip Rivers kind of performance, which was thrilling, but for both sides. I'm curious, at any first of all, how did you feel going into Sunday after Bryson had drained that long putt to get to within two at 18 on Saturday? Did you think Rory was going to win going into the final round before it started?
I really did. I had a quiet confidence as Sunday arrived, and I woke up Sunday morning, and one of the things I did was, you know, jump into the FanDuel Sportsbook and make a little bit of a wager on Rory in a head-to-head against Bryson. And a lot of that was because, well, there's two reasons. In the first place, it did seem like it was just going to be a match between Rory and Bryson. They had separated themselves enough that it felt like one of those two guys was the most likely winner. And then secondarily, Bryson was fighting his game all week. Nobody took more practiced shots on the range than Bryson DeChambeau. And kudos to the Masters for creating, you know, giving all of us fans of the game the opportunity to see the guys on the range and all of the shots they took. Really fun. But I thought that Rory would handle Bryson, and I thought that meant that Rory would win.
It's always fun to watch you on the range, but that's another conversation altogether. What did you think after he doubled number one? Were you concerned at that point?
I was concerned, and I immediately, once again, you know, started thinking about the potential for other winners. The way that Bryson got up and down, the serious concern I had with Rory for that final round was if he had to rely on short game scrambling to, you know, get around the golf course, then he didn't really have a shot. Bryson is so far superior at that, and it was the thing that kept Bryson in the tournament the entire week. And we watched it live on the first hole where Bryson was able to get up and down, save par on number one, Rory with the double bogey. And it felt like, oh God, here we go.
Yeah. And then, you know, we could go through the whole round, but I want to get to some other things, but 13 was, you know, it was awful. I'll fast forward to 18. Look, I was rooting for him too. I think a lot of people were, and it was an emotional roller coaster ride all day long. First of all, I thought the Nance victory march, you know, theme to the final hole was way too premature. We've all watched Rory so many times, you know, bogey. I thought double bogey could be in play before his tee shot. But did you think, I didn't think he would make that putt. Did you think he'd make that putt 18 regulation before the playoff?
I did not. I did not think he was going to make that putt. After what he showed us on 13, and then he followed it up with the bogey on 14, it was like the most Rory experience ever to come back with a genuine eagle attempt on 15 and then a truly transcendent birdie on 17 that should have been the clincher. But when we got to 18, he hit the ball in the middle of the fairway, and your observation with Nance is so on the money. Buddy, let's just be quiet. That Rory McIlroy is full of shenanigans. Nothing is done with Rory McIlroy until the ball's in the hole. Let's just be quiet.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. Like, he did not have a two or three shot lead. You know, for me, and you're a much bigger fan, it sounds like. I mean, my stomach, when he stepped to the tee after Justin Rose put it in the fairway in the playoff, that was the one before the putt that won it. I was like, God, dude, just put it in play. Don't put it in the trap. Don't hit it OB to the right. And I was so nervous for him in that moment. Look, the final putt too, but where were you? I am assuming you were about to get sick over the final 20 minutes of real time golf.
Yeah. And honestly, I wasn't that worried about the tee ball off of the playoff hole, off of 18 once again, because he hit great tee balls all week on 18. The problem was when he gets to his number, you know, it was 125 on the 72nd hole of competition, and he flared it right into the bunker. Now, why did he do that? Well, just nerves, just the 6 inches between his ears. So I wasn't worried about the tee ball. It was what's going to happen when he has a wedge in his hands and he has an approach on a number that he likes. Is he going to be able to execute it? Can he shut up whatever the demons are that are swimming around him and inside his brain and just go execute the way that he's capable of? And that wedge shot was impeccable, an all-timer. It will go down, I think. In it's not quite comparable to Bryson DeChambeau's shot out of the bunker in the U.S. Open
last
but
year,
in a playoff to knock it to 3 feet. That showed the true champion that Rory, that all of us who are Rory fans want him to be. And so I was not worried after he made that shot about the putt to win the tournament.
He did say it was a flatter lie than the one at the end of his round.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure.
I was still nervous. I mean, look, it was 2.5, 3 feet. If he had missed that one, I don't know where we go from there. I think it's really bad moving forward, especially if he loses the tournament. But are you, and I'll wrap up the Rory conversation, are you a believer in, now that he's got that, you know, taken care of after 11 years, that he's going to go on a run now?
I am. I do believe that. I think that there's nobody that's playing better golf than him in the world. It was the primary lead storyline into the tournament. No, yeah. If not now, when? Because he was playing so well. He had arrived for the first time in his entire professional career at Augusta National with 2 wins on U.S. soil. And, you know, in across all of the sort of measuring metrics, he's at the very top of performance. And so now that the mental part seems to be sort of under control, he's put that you know, bit of bugaboo in the rearview mirror. There's no reason. We immediately go to a golf course in Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship. Yeah. That is one of his most comfortable venues, right, of anywhere in the world. And so, you know, is there any reason to think that he can't win? No. The U.S. Open at Oakmont, he certainly can excel there. And then the British Open at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, it will be a nice test of I'm just going to knock on wood that he remains healthy, you know, because that's always a question mark. But if he's healthy and arrives at Royal Portrush, that will be a level of pressure that's going to be really interesting.
Talking to Joe House, real quickly before I forget, Celtic City is excellent. Have you been watching it?
I have, and I was about to say thank you for that, but I didn't have anything to do with it.
I didn't know if you had anything to do with it. I know it's a Bill Simmons special, right, and I actually heard him interviewed on Mad Dog the other day, and it was really good, but it is really well done.
Yeah, one of the nice things about being pals with a guy who does documentaries like that is I do get to see advanced stuff and give some feedback, and I just get to sit and watch and talk through some things. And so I've seen the entire series. The thing for me that is an element that just makes me proud for my friend and all of the seeing all of the reaction to it, it really is a history of the NBA.
Yeah.
And if you're an NBA fan at all, that history, you know, being reminded of it, revisiting it in this manner through the prism of the Boston team, it's pretty incredible.
Really well done. Recommend it if anybody hasn't seen it. And to Joe's point, it really is so much about not only the history of the league, but, you know, during, you know, times in which, you know, it was about culture, certainly,
right,
in the 60s into the 70s. It's really very well done. All right. Before we get to the NBA playoffs, who do you want your favorite football team to pick a week from last night?
You know, it's kind of a crazy feeling, Kevin. I have no anxiety whatsoever as we approach this draft. I know it would be great to get something on the order of safety or cornerback, and I like the names that I'm seeing in those positions. Edge would be tremendous. But the true feeling, the true emotion I have coming into this is I trust our decision makers just so extensively that I don't feel any, I don't think they're going to make a wrong decision. And so I want to improve the defense, and I feel like they're going to make a good decision in that regard.
benefit of the doubt Joe House, which is where I've been to a certain degree, too. There is, they've earned it, you know, at least for now. I mean, somebody mentioned to me last week, I think somebody wrote me a letter just saying, look, Jaden was easy. Like that was the difference maker. I mean, without him, they're a 6-11 or a 7-10 football team, and anybody could have picked him at number two. The interesting thing, Joe, is I think they would have picked him at number one. I think they liked him more than any other quarterback. And they've said that, you know, after the fact, but I think I knew that a little bit even going into the draft, that they were thrilled that they were going to be able to take him and not have the decision at number one. All right.
What's funny to me, I don't think it was easy. There was a lot of folks that made great, compelling cases for Drake May. And I honestly felt like either one of Drake May or Jaden could have been a good selection. Now, there's a whole bunch of intangibles associated with Jaden that clearly separate him from both Drake May and Caleb. But, great job. And let's just build off of that track record.
Yeah, look, I mean, Drake May's story, none of these stories have been completely written. They just had 1 year. It's just that Jaden's year was all time for a rookie. But, you know, those that love Drake May, and I didn't, I like Jaden a lot more, but they may not be wrong long term. We'll see.
That's right.
All right, let's talk NBA playoffs, because I'll be honest with you. The East is fine. I'll pay attention. But I got the Celtics in the final. I don't even think they get tested, do you?
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Possibly by Cleveland, but Cleveland has to show a maturity that we haven't seen from them in postseason basketball. Now, I am a true Kenny Atkinson believer, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think that he, as much as anybody, is responsible for pulling out of Evan Mobley a level of play for Mobley that puts him in the conversation for all NBA teams. And the Cavaliers do have the size to match up with the Celtics, but my instinct is basically the same as yours, which is to pencil the Celtics into the being the Eastern representative in the NBA Finals.
All right, before we get to the West, the other day I did something that I basically do on an annual basis, because you know this, because you've got a lot of friends that are the same way. They don't love the NBA like they used to, and they certainly can't. They hate the NBA regular season, and I annually give just a suggestion. It's a strong suggestion that if you are a sports fan, the NBA playoffs are completely different than the NBA regular season. I think it's the largest gap of all of the sports that we watch, the four majors, between regular season and postseason. I don't even think it's close. And the game the other night between Golden State and Memphis was just spectacular, you know, start to finish. I mean, Curry at 37, pouring in 37, 15 of the last 19, playoff Jimmy Butler, 38 points. I mean, it was just a sensational basketball game. And I love this time of year, and I know you do too, but do you agree with me, or do you think it's another sport that the divide, the gap between regular season and postseason, there's no bigger than in the NBA?
No, I definitely agree with you. Both baseball and hockey have tournaments where unexpected teams can get hot and go on run in those tournaments.
Right.
But for the caliber of play night in to night out, playoff NBA basketball is incomparable. And it looks absolutely nothing like regular season NBA basketball. And that isn't really, to me, a knock on regular season NBA basketball. The true richness of the NBA playoffs comes from the fact that the teams have to play each other a minimum of four games. And so you get to see these coaches and the organizations scheming and game planning for their opponent in a way that's not possible during the regular season. And that's where the real richness of the competition comes from, in my humble opinion.
I think that's part of it, but I would add that there's a sense of urgency that just never exists during the regular season. You know, from start to finish, not just game to game, but within the game, from the opening tap until the end of the game. You know, I was having this conversation with Scott, with Van Pelt the other night, and I just said, yeah, I don't even know how you truly evaluate NBA players during the regular season, because it's really hard when you don't know the level of effort that each team is giving. I mean, sometimes it's the back half of a back-to-back, and that's a different mindset and a different physical capability than you had maybe going into it. I just think this is the time of year when you get into not necessarily one-and-dones, but the feeling of a one-and-done, when you can truly evaluate.
I don't disagree with that. There are referendum games throughout the season where teams want to prove something to other teams. We saw that quite a bit with the Houston Rockets this season, with this young, fierce roster who, you would look at this up, had the best record against teams above 500 in the entire NBA. And it's basically because they were using all of these regular season games as measuring stick games for themselves. So there are those kinds of examples, but those are exception, and I don't disagree with you. I'm glad you shouted out SVP. You just reminded me. I got to give SVP some credit as well. It's already a bucket list anytime you're able to get down to the Masters, Kevin. And have you been?
I have. Just
okay,
once,
great.
Though. Did you,
yeah,
did
okay.
you go?
Well, look, I was there this year. I was down Monday to Friday. We did a lot of content from down there. It was really fun. But we did run into Scott up top at the great convening where number one tee box and number 10 tee box come together. And he's a man of the people. He's holding forth. But I was there with my group, and he was just getting ready to walk a couple of luminaries in the butler's cabin. And he said, "Hey, guys, why don't you come with me?" And so you take the bucket list and then you go a whole nother level of walking into Butler's cabin with Scott Van Pelt, and Scott was kind enough to take a picture of me and Simmons and the entire crew in Butler's cabin. I sat in the guest chair, not the Nance chair. Simmons sat in the Nance chair. I sat in the guest chair. But talk about an all-time bucket list item and SVP. Love that guy so much.
All right, let's get back to the West. We don't want his head to swell too much.
All right.
All right, I cannot
big
wait.
Head.
I cannot wait for the West. And let's start with where you kind of left off before you started to talk about Scott, and that is with Houston. Golden State's a -180 to -190 favorite in this series. Do you think they should be?
No, that price is out of whack. And it's a price that, if you told me this is going to be the sort of odds for the last 5 minutes of each game, and we're inside sort of a clutch moment, that is to say, both teams are within 5 points of one another, and it's the last 5 minutes of the game. If you want to tell me that Golden State is a favorite of that order of magnitude under those circumstances, then yeah, I can kind of get my head around it, because I trust the Warriors to execute down the stretch in the clutch moments more than I trust the Rockets. The thing that has held the Rockets back this season has been their half-court offense, and especially at end of games. Even though the Rockets have a very good record over the course of the season in these so-called, you know, clutch games. But the problem for the Warriors is they have kind of three guys, two of which that are capable of scoring, but they are very thin. And Coach Steve Kerr has been showing what can only be treated as a lack of confidence in Jonathan Kuminga, in Brandon Podzenski. I mean, guys are sitting
Kuminga
on the bench.
Kuminga didn't play the other night.
I understand. I don't know what's going on. It's playoff time. They need to, in the first place, make sure that Draymond and Jimmy Buckets and Steph are ready. And in the second place, build up some confidence in these role players that you need, because the Rockets have wave after wave of young athletic talent, Kev.
They do, but it's, as you said, they're not great in the half court. And if these are close games, you end up trusting the experience this time of year, for sure.
Exactly. And that's
so
why
who are you picking?
I am going to pick the Warriors, because I'm going to pick against them in the next round. I think that the attrition of – I think this is going to be a long series, a minimum of 6 games, possibly 7 games. I like the Warriors to come out of it, but I think it's going to take so much out of them that the next round potentially against the Los Angeles Lakers. I know the league is rooting for it. I'm prepared to take their opponent.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because it sounds like you're leaning Lakers, who are also, you know, growing as a favorite over Minnesota. Who do you like and why?
I honestly think that the Timberwolves are going to give the Lakers a humongous challenge. The thing that you can't discount is where Luka Doncic is in terms of his own health and his own, you know, sort of getting back into the flow. We saw it took him a while. I mean, he came back after the trade deadline for the Lakers, still just working himself back into the mix. And there were really only two what we would call signature Luka games. He had a signature game against Oklahoma City, because I think the Lakers wanted to prove something to Oklahoma City. And then he scored 45 points in his return to Dallas, and it's kind of obvious how and why he would do that. But he's really the crucial linchpin to this entire breakdown. He has been a Timberwolves killer. He has been a Rudy Gobert killer in his career. But the Timberwolves are deep. They're big and they're deep. And the thing that makes the Lakers different from the Dallas teams that Luka played on is they don't have bigs that can crash to the basket the way that Dallas did. And that those pick and rolls where Luka could just put the ball up at the rim, that's not going to be there for the Lakers. And so that's what makes this matchup is especially rich.
Yeah. Can Minnesota play consistently big with Rudy Gobert on the floor?
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think it matters, because they can play big with Naz Reid, and you know, they can play big with Jaden McDaniels, and they can play big with who am I forgetting? They have enough kind of otherwise
Randall.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they have enough size that it's okay if the Lakers scheme to get Rudy off the floor.
All right, let's move to the series that I'm really intrigued by because of the way they have played down the stretch. Again, it's the regular season, but the big if Kawhi Leonard can stay healthy for 7 games and maybe beyond that, and Denver not playing well heading into the postseason. So how do you see Denver, LA, the 4 versus the 5, Denver with the home court advantage?
Well, it's obviously the starting point is what you just described, which is, can Kawhi be healthy? No team arrives in these playoffs playing better than the LA Clippers. Over the last 15 to 20 games, they're tops of the league in net rating and tops of the league in both defensive and offensive rating.
Awesome and defensively. Again, regular awesome season, but they've been awesome defensively.
And so what makes this matchup so fascinating, I think the Clippers have the best head coach and bench in the entire tournament here.
Because of Van Gundy Ty Lue? Yes,
both. The combination of those guys and the way that they can scheme, especially when they have a team where they're like, we need to win 4 games against this team. I trust those guys so much to create advantages for the Clippers. The Nuggets still have four guys that were on the team that won the 2023 NBA title, and that's pretty powerful. And they also have, you know, Russell Westbrook, who you just can't play in the fourth quarter, but what he does in terms of coming off the bench with energy and force, and, you know, he's got lots of playoff chops. The problem with the Nuggets is that when Jokic isn't on the floor, they become, they're basically a 500 team, if that. And, you know, they can't play Jokic 48 minutes. I bet they play him 44 minutes. I bet he doesn't play less than 42 minutes in any game. But the Nuggets do, on balance, I think, have an advantage on offense. But the Nuggets hit a real rough spot, so rough that it got their coach and their GM both fired, half a week ago. Playing defense. They were one of the worst defenses in the NBA over the last 30 games. And so how are they going to address that against a Clippers team that can score both inside and outside, especially with a healthy Kawhi?
We're talking to Joe House from the Ringer. So here's what bothers me about the Clippers. And I hear this about Ty Lue all the time, and I think Van Gundy's been a big plus for them. And by the way, guys, we're talking about Jeff Van Gundy, who used to be, you know, with Mike Breen, a part of the number one broadcast team. And now he is on the bench with Ty Lue in LA, and they're doing a phenomenal job defensively. I've watched a lot of them down the stretch. And I remember the last time, even when Kawhi was healthy, I'm a massive Kawhi Leonard fan, always have been, even though there are a lot of reasons not to be a fan of him. But beyond that, I still see a team that relies far too much, Joe, offensively in the half court on ISO with Harden. Yep. And I just never trust, you know, that's why I didn't trust Dallas last year. Look, they were playing a better team ultimately, and they got to the finals, but they just rely too much on ISO or, you know, two man, one ball screen, that's it. And it actually looks uncomfortable at times to watch with Harden and four guys basically standing around unless Zubats is involved in the ball screen. What do you think?
Well, you're right. Although I think they did tap into something over these last 20 games. I mean, your complaint is well-founded. The pick and roll with Harden and Zubac has been a revelation this entire season.
He's
so much
good.
So that Zubac, he might make an all-NBA third team. I mean, that's how good he's been on offense and how the harmony with Harden has worked out. But Kawhi's arrival, you just can't, you know, understate how impactful Kawhi's ability to penetrate, his mid-range game, which come playoff time, you know, the entire NBA eschews the mid-range until it's time where you really have to start making baskets. And so like, that'll be a difference maker for Luka. If Luka knocks down inside the arc buckets, then look out for the Lakers. But the same is true for sure for the Clippers, and that's where Kawhi could really excel. And that creates then the opportunities for the three-point shooters on the Clippers in Norm Powell, in Bogdanovich, like look for him. Chris Dunn, let those guys, you know, get some threes up. If they knock down their threes, then it's going to be a tough series for Denver.
Yeah, I think if the Clippers advance, and by the way, not just past this round, but perhaps even further, it's going to be about what they do defensively and how many turnovers they can force and how they can get out and run. So I've saved the team that had an unbelievable regular season, all-time regular season in terms of point differential, Oklahoma City. We know how they are. For those that don't follow it, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be the MVP this year. They're the number one seed. They won 68 games. And they'll have home court advantage in any series they play, including in the finals. So your belief level on Oklahoma City is where?
I am extremely high on Oklahoma City. And it comes down to me to the improvements that they made in the offseason to their roster. They just knocked it out of the park with the acquisition of Isaiah Hartenstein and the acquisition of Alex Caruso. And the Hartenstein acquisition especially, because that guy's basketball IQ is, you know, I'm not going to say it rivals LeBron James, but he is such a smart player on both ends of the floor that it's a force multiplier. What I mean by that is it has an impact on a guy like Chet Holmgren. It frees up Chet Holmgren to be an inside-outside kind of player because Hartenstein is down there doing the dirty work and collecting the rebounds that must be collected for success in the playoffs. And that was the one element that was missing. If it's a healthy Chet Holmgren and it's a healthy Hartenstein and it's Caruso on the perimeter, along with all of the dogs that Oklahoma City already has in terms of athletes and shooters and SGA playing at the MVP level, I think Oklahoma City, it's right that they are the presumptive favorite. And I'm looking forward to them, you know, getting into that matchup with whoever wins the 4-5 between the Clippers and Denver, because that will be the first true test. There will be no test for Oklahoma City whatsoever in the 1-8 matchup, either Dallas or Memphis. But next round is where it starts to get interesting, Kev.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, although if Dallas wins tonight, they're going to like just ask maybe Dallas fans to say, why don't you just pay attention to us, like the guys you actually have? It was impressive the other night. I'm actually a little bit surprised Memphis is a 6.5, 7-point favorite tonight because of the absolute war they played Tuesday night and Ja Morant's health. I don't know what it is heading into tonight. All right. We both have Boston in the finals. Who faces them in the finals? And then who doesn't cut down the nets? Who wins the championship?
Wow. I think it's going to be Boston. I think Boston is, it's going to be, I think Oklahoma City will get there. And then Boston, with all of their playoff experience, will ultimately prevail. I hate to say it, but I think it's a repeat for Boston.
I have a plus 900 on Golden State from the Jimmy Butler trade on to win the West.
Well done. You just need
I will have an opportunity to hedge, you know, especially if they can win this first round series. But I think you said something like I saw a team that relied on two players the other night with not much of a bench that I could certainly see in a long series them just running out of gas. I mean, Steph looked exhausted at the end of the play-in game the other night. But it's going to be fun to watch all of this.
Always.
Thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure. My favorite bet, by the way, of all, and the price has tightened up a little bit. I love Milwaukee over the Indiana Pacers in the 4-5 in the East. Giannis hasn't gotten to play in the playoffs these two previous years. Look out. Make a big investment in all the Giannis props as much as you can tolerate. With your bankroll, I think he's going to absolutely go off against the Pacers.
I can't believe the Pistons are such an underdog where they are right now. And it's
That's the crazy people in New York all with the irrational exuberance. I like Cade making a little bit of a statement here, especially in Madison Square Garden. But ultimately, the Knicks are too deep for Detroit.
You're the best. I'll see you soon. Thanks.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Joe House, everybody, at House from D.C., Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.